Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for showing up. Let's get on into it. I'd like to begin by stating my purpose here. The Gingerbread Man is a space of open thought. I would like to inspire creativity and the desire to want to look for information and for ideas that are key to oneself, and from there, one's capability and agency to create one's own spirituality, or whatever word you want to use for that. But I want to use my relationship with my world and discussing stories and literally quoting stories and books that I read in order to help show transparency and vulnerability, I think. Even though we can't have a discussion face to face in this format, and I'm purely recording myself, and in reality, I'm basically speaking to a wall. Still, I want to be able to use that system in order to relate to you. And I want to show you how important you are and how important every human is through that. But anyways, I also want to push love, and I want to show how love is infectious and is a virus, and showing goodwill and showing compassion towards others is a viral way to impact your world and to physically have an effect. And I think it's real world magic, even if that's murky. So me and my son are about to go on a trip. We're going to go to a wedding in Arizona. Two of my best friends have found each other and found union with themselves. And now we're becoming one, which is a beautiful, momentous occasion. And with as important it is, as it is to them, this is, of course, vicariously a very important thing to me, because there's absolutely nothing in the world that would come between me not being there for these very important people to me. And that's because they are beautiful human beings. They have always been there for me. And I'm looking forward to seeing them because they've been gone for a while. And being able to see them is going to be an amazing experience. I have a lot of anxiety about travel, and this is the first time that me and my son will be leaving the state and going to do something just by ourselves. Whereas the last time we went to California, I had my whole family with me. You know, this time I bought the ticket. We're doing the whole shindig. And I haven't asked enough questions about what we're arriving to. So we'll see, though. It's going to be a good time. And I've never been to a wedding before. And I think that the energy of what a wedding stands for is somehow within my purview. And I think that I will enjoy being there and witnessing this. So wish me luck, everybody. Wish them luck, too, please. And it is the first time that I've taken a significant break from work freely, you know. The last time that I was able to get this much time off was when I had COVID. And that's not quite a vacation. But asking for the time off from work was nerve-wracking, and not being very financially secure, not having the income for this time period is nerve-wracking. But I think it's necessary. I think to experience a little bit of breathing room and to take a break from work is going to be good for me. And I have to look at it as a positive thing and not as a completely stressful thing either. But it's going to be it's a good situation. And me and Odin together for this time period, I need to focus on being soft and listening and giving him open choice and opportunity to make decisions for himself. And with this much contact between me and him, I have to be extra vigilant and extra careful to be modeling good behavior for what I want to see. But I know I keep saying it, but this is all a good thing. And this is what I'm walking into this week. So when I come back to you next week, we'll be discussing that and all the integration of all those different circumstances. So why do you think we have to expose ourselves to differences? Routine can be manageable, and routine is necessary, especially in the Western world, because we have this 9-to-5 schedule where we have to adhere to other people's duties so that we can secure ourselves, you know, life. When you have to be at work at a certain time, even if it's not when you would naturally wake up, you know, you have an alarm clock, you have these artificial systems that you have to adhere to. So this forms a routine because of needing to be in a certain place at a certain time. If you didn't have that 9-to-5 schedule and you worked for yourself, maybe you wouldn't have such a routinized time. Or maybe you'd wake up when you wanted to, which could make some big differences in how subjective life appears to us. So I've always been a very routine individual, and I work really good within habit. And I think it's because habit is almost a way to go onto autopilot. When you have a habitual life, you don't have to make decisions about where you're supposed to be. And I like to joke that on any Saturday, at any time of any Saturday, you could probably find me in almost the exact same location doing the exact same thing. And that has let me outsource a lot of my energy output so that I can focus on all my heady pursuits and conundrums instead of thinking about what I'm doing and where I'm going to be. But I think this is also made me almost fragile to change. And so when we live within strict habit and we are broken out of our routine, this can cause panic. And I think this is also related to how an OCD lifestyle could be. And I've also been labeled that and been told by friends and peers that I work in a very OCD fashion, you know. When I figure out how to do something, I do it the same way every single time. I do dishes the exact same way every single time. I always start with, you know, a certain set, like plates, and then I'll do pots, and then I'll do silverware or whatever at home and even at work. And when I get into a new establishment and I start a new job or I move from one house to a new house and I have new dishes, like if you have roommates, often you have to share dishware with other people. And when I'm in a new situation at first, it can be very scary, almost, trying to figure out new routines. And I do it, and it's the first time that is essentially not very exciting. But once I get to the second and the third time, and I have a set way to do things, I can feel more relaxed. And so I think there's a lot of different types of people in the world. And I don't think many people are like me. And I don't think many people are exactly like you. We can categorize and dichotomize people according to psychiatry and to the DSM-5 and all these experience and empirically based scientific ways to look at people. And sure, there's going to be sample sets of people who are similar, but nobody is exactly like the character that you are on this planet. You know, nobody has had your set of experiences. And even within twins and twin studies, from twin to twin, even when twins have been separated at birth and live far away in different separate geographic locations, even though they might appear physically the same and do make a lot of similar decisions, there are often crucial differences too. And so, of course, the nature versus nurture debate comes in at this point. How much of who we are is based upon what happened to us and the genes that we were born with? Were we born with it, or did we work, build, and live it? You know? So I think that there are people who can't stand routine. And I think that there are people who look at my lifestyle and who may look at other people's lifestyles and think it's excruciatingly boring. Whereas I look at a lot of other people's lifestyles and I think it looks exhausting and tiring. But these are just judgments, and judgment calls are purely subjective and aren't worth much. So every single person has a different way of approaching how they organize their lives. And what may be good for one may be stressful and detrimental for the others. But what I'm pushing tonight is the active pursuit of what makes us uncomfortable. You know? The active pursuit of what may make us anxious within healthy doses and with a little bit of sugar, of course, to make the medicine go down. But approaching it carefully is, of course, important. And even within not planning, there has to be a bit of planning to go into it. So if I were trying to hold on and to keep my centers of comfort going, I would run away from this trip, honestly. I would have quit it and been selfish and stuck to my own feelings and said that I can't do this right now, even though it's important to very important people to me. In that artificial world, I would have maintained comfort and stagnancy. Yet, there are other people out there whose comfort comes from having no routine and living completely and continuously spontaneously. You see? So for my other, as subjective as the other is, within all these veils of separation that at the end of the day I do truly believe are illusionary and myths we tell ourselves. Yet, I think it's important for both or any of the myriad types, quote unquote, of people to pursue the opposition of habit or anti-habit. It's important for us to feel uncomfortable and to go outside of our space. And I immediately recognized more than 8 months ago when I agreed to this, that even though this was far outside my comfort zone, that this was going to happen and needed to happen for the space and the environment, but also for my own personal growth and for me and Odin to grow as well. Just like us moving into this apartment alone is incredibly heavy, but it's needed for personal growth as well as soaking and being in the environment and soothing the environment. And so what do I mean by soothing the environment? We can live with or against the grain, the stream, the river of life. We can go with it or we can fight it. I've used a metaphor in the past of a ball floating down a rapid river and it's terrifying. And you also see a lot of people swimming in that river, desperately trying to get out, but there's steep sides and nobody can get out of this river. And so they keep going through it and going through the rapids and going through the motions. But as they fight and they struggle, they tire and they hurt themselves. I seek to be like a floating ball with absolutely no give or fight and no limbs. And eventually I want to identify myself with the river itself. I'd see myself as the environment, as the stream. And I'm moving towards that, but I'm young. And my brain and my fragile little ego still have so many constructs that I'm maneuvering through. I think a lot of people are. So we can live in and with the river and accept our circumstances with joy, if possible. So another story, parable, what have you, that I don't think I've shared in a while is the myth of Sisyphus. So Sisyphus was a Greek tragedy, or a character in a tragedy. He had blasphemed Hades in some way, or done something horrendous in his life that I can't exactly remember what he did at this moment. But when he died, Hades just bound him and was determined to give him the worst afterlife that this soul could ever handle or encumber. And so he gives Sisyphus a gigantic boulder and demands that he pushes the boulder up to the top of the hill. And every day the boulder would roll back down, and then Sisyphus would struggle the boulder back up to the top of its place, and then it would fall back again. Awful. Horrendous work. Backbreaking labor. Supposed to break a man's spirit. Yet the strong-willed man that was Sisyphus decided to look up to the god of death and the underworld. And instead of taking on some sort of punishment, he looked up and he smiled. And that was his last victory over the one that he had shunned and spurned in his living life and still found a way to win while dead. And so to be the ball in the river and to be able to take whatever rapid or whatever waterfall or tumble comes, which is just should be expected, honestly, every morning to wake up and expect struggle, expect to encounter ignorance, and expect to have somebody not understand you, and expect to not be able to communicate oneself. Expect to not be heard, because it's part of life too, is miscommunication. And that's the veils of Maya. And that's the veils of all of these illusions that we help create through our own myth making. So I think it's also necessary when pushing our own boulders to maybe go pick a different boulder sometimes. I don't know. Maybe I'm mixing metaphors. That one felt clunky. But life and the environment, the stream, God, whatever you want to call it, Tao, Dharma, Brahma, it doesn't matter what you want to call life, but it has a special way of communicating with us if we listen clearly. We can hear the words of life come through another being and then another human, even an infant. The way that someone lives their life, even if it's in opposition to yours, can speak volumes and can teach. Experience can teach. The waterfall that life gave you can teach. And so when anything comes and approaches, and any new change happens, when any happening happens again, damn it. Damn it. Or, look, we have a new opportunity. Here's a new chance. This is drastically different than how I would choose to do things. And this is nothing to do with the wedding, by the way. I don't want you to think that I'm talking shit about this wedding. I'm very excited to go. But in a very vague and general way, when anything comes that's difficult, and that could even be financially burdensome, because things that are really fun cost a lot of money, you know? But, oh, look at this opportunity. This is what Tao has given me today. This is what I can study. How can I do this to the best of my ability? How can I get through this situation gracefully? How can I treat people well the best while I do this? Who is helping me? Who's not helping me? Does it matter if they're not? How can I help the person who's not helping me? These are important questions too. So, step outside the box. Think outside the box. Look at all the chances that you have to do things and stretch. Speaking of stretching, I remember reading, I think it was in a Ram Dass book, where he had this meditation practice where he requested that once one was in a sitting position and arrived in calm, and once one has found one breath, you focus on your heart, your inner heart, the center of your being, which just doesn't have to be the physical beat, but the heart that you think and feel and love from. Imagine on the inside of that space being a small figure, which could be whatever god in any deity, or, you know, but you picture it as your inner god, your inner being, your inner deity, your inner grace, the goodness that you're tapping into. And in your meditation, imagine it slowly expanding from that little small pinpoint in the middle of your center of your heart, and expanding out of that cave and into the corners and crevices of your body, and imagining that spirit completely absorbing you, and then going out past your physical limits, and then imagining that spirit inside the whole room, and then inside the whole house, and then eventually expanding and encompassing the entire block, and then the entire city. And then you keep picturing it expanding until it is the entire state that you live in, or the entire country, until that inner deity is the world. And then you keep expanding until you are the universe, at least in this mental projection and practice. And then you imagine it coming all the way back into your inner spirit, and looking out and seeing, you know, if we are intrinsically connected with everything in the outside, if everything that's inside, even on the cellular level, is dependent upon other cells, and every being in the environment is dependent upon every being, couldn't every single speck of existence be dependent upon itself? And the only thing thinking it's separate is that little ego and that decision and judgment of separation. Anyway, some things to think on. I want to do a little bit of quotes tonight, but before that, I would like to thank you sincerely for being here and for showing up again. I appreciate your attendance, and I appreciate your attention. I think you are an important being. I think that you're special, and I'm grateful that you're breathing and that you woke this morning, and I hope that you wake up again tomorrow. Thank you so much for being. And please go show somebody else a gratitude for their existence. If you could do that thing for me. And then hopefully they can go do that for another. Let's see if that chain reaction and that experiment can make a little firework. Huh? At least it's worth a try. All right. Let's see what some old dead dudes have to say. All right. This first reading is Towards the End of Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse, from the chapter labeled Om. And Siddhartha has recently lost his son and, massive fucking, what do you want to call it? What do? I just told you the story. Anyways, I forgot what they call that. Anyways, teaser. Yep, massive teaser, guys. So if you don't want to know, skip this part of the book, even if I already kind of ruined it for you. So he lost his son, and he's been very distraught and just miserable for a while, but he keeps going because he knows that he's at least living his peace, and he knows that he's living in life, and he's still basically fully awake, and he has just basically like almost thrown himself into his misery because he's unwilling to hide from it, at least in my opinion. Anyways, here goes. Siddhartha tried to listen better. The picture of his father, his own picture, and the picture of his son all flowed into each other. Kamala's picture also appeared and flowed on, and the picture of Govinda and the others emerged and passed. They all became part of the river. It was the goal of all of them, yearning, desiring, suffering. And the river's voice was full of longing, full of smarting woe, full of insatiable desire. The river flowed on towards its goal. Siddhartha saw the river hasten, made up for himself and his relatives and all the people he had ever seen. All the waters and water hastened, suffering, towards goals, many goals, to the waterfall, to the sea, to the current, to the ocean, and all the goals were reached, and each one was succeeded by another. The water changed to vapor and rose and became rain, and it came down again. It became spring, brook, and river, and it changed anew, floated anew. But the yearning voice had altered. It still echoed sorrowfully, searchingly, but other voices accompanied it, voices of pleasure and sorrow, good and evil, laughing and lamenting, hundreds of voices, thousands of voices. Siddhartha listened. He was now listening intently. Completely absorbed, quite empty, taking in everything, he felt that he had now completely learned the art of listening. He had often heard all of this before, all those numerous voices in the river. But today they sounded different. He could no longer distinguish the different voices, the merry voices from the weeping voice, the childish voice from the manly voice. They all belonged to each other. The lament of those who yearn, the laughter of the wise, the cry of indignation and groan of the dying. They were all interwoven and interlocked, entwined in a thousand ways, and all the voices, all the goals, all the yearnings, all the sorrows, all the pleasures, all the good and the evil, all of them together was the world. All of them together was the stream of events, the music of life. When Siddhartha listened attentively to this river, to this song of a thousand voices, when he did not listen to the sorrow or the laughter, when he did not bind his soul to any one particular voice and absorb it into his self, but when he heard them all, the whole, the unity, then the great song of a thousand voices consisted of one word, Om. Perfection. So, he and Vasudeva, which is basically like his best friend in his old age, are sitting to a river and they're just listening to the river wash by. And this is what he is depicting in that piece. And it's one of the most beautiful and powerful pieces of this very powerful piece that's ever moved me. And I've related heavily to this book by Hermann Hesse, even though it was shocking and much different than I ever thought it was going to be. All right. To finish it off, how about a little bit of Lao Tzu? with chapter 39, Integrity of the Tao Te Ching. Those who of old got to be whole. Heaven through its wholeness is pure. Earth through its wholeness is steady. Spirit through its wholeness is potent. The valley through its wholeness flows with rivers. The 10,000 things through their wholeness live. Rulers through their wholeness have authority. Their wholeness makes them what they are. Without what makes it pure, heaven would disintegrate. Without what steadies it, earth would crack apart. Without what makes it potent, spirits would fail. Without what fills it, the valley would run dry. Without what quickens them, the 10,000 things would die. Without what authorizes them, rulers would fall. The root of the noble is in the common. The high stands on what's below. Princes and kings call themselves orphans, widowers, beggars, to get themselves rooted in the dirt. A multiplicity of riches is poverty. Jade is praised as precious, but its strength is being stone. So that one's a little deep. And instead of the commentary, I'd just like you to think on it. And remember that my email address, The Gingerbread Man's Dialogues, which is an easily available, clickable hot link in the show notes on whatever format that you are listening to this show on, you can talk to me. We can have a discourse. We can have a discussion. If you disagree with anything that I said, I'm not here to push my own ideas. And half of what I said could have been horseshit, and I might disagree with myself a year from now. But I'm trying. So if you have anything that can help expand my mind and my consciousness and help push my purview, please give me some new information and let's have a talk. Let's learn more about this world and let's investigate together. Thank you so much for being here. Let's see what Odin thinks.
Hey people, it's me.
It's him.
I forgot.
It's Gingerbread Man and Ask O. There we go. That was a pretty good harmony, huh?
Yeah, that was.
That was pretty cool.
Okay, tell us our question.
So my question for you today, big man, is do you like waking up at the same time every morning?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, tell me about it. Dig into that. What does it feel like to wake up at a different time?
It feels like...
They can't hear you. You gotta talk over here.
It feels like I have... It feels like I'm having a fun time with my dad.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. Well, he has a lot of fun when I wake him up in the morning for school. I guess that's a good thing. You like waking up early for school?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for helping me with the show. I'm trying to
knock my gingerbread man down.
I know. All right, guys. Thank you. Have a good night.